Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Monday morning, the 6th of April, and the time check in our studios is just 9:05. A very good morning to you all, and thank you for tuning to Africa Link. My name is Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Kenya begins a mourning period after an attack on a university campus left at least 148 students dead.
As we mourn together for the fallen, I declare 3 days of national mourning, during which our flag shall fly at half-mast.
Tension subsides in Nigeria's volatile regions where many residents had fled afraid of post-election violence.
Before the election, we are all scared. Everybody is scared, thinking that there will be a high rate of crisis. But thank to God, there's not anything like that.
These stories plus our radio drama series, Learning by Ear, coming up in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin in Kenya, where the president, Uhuru Kenyatta, has declared a 3-day mourning period after the gruesome attack at a university in Garissa left at least 148 students dead. Relatives are still trying to identify the dead at a mortuary in the capital, Nairobi. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the deadliest attack in the country so far. From Nairobi, James Shimanyula reports.
Hundreds of relatives and parents thronged the University of Nairobi's Chiromo mortuary to identify bodies of students that were killed last Thursday when Al-Shabaab militants stormed the Garissa University College, killing 148 people and injuring dozens of others. As I made my way through the crowds at the mortuary, there were many scenes of grief and disbelief over the loss of people's loved ones. ...32-year-old Victor Okech, a teacher from Western Kenya, spoke to me after spending 3 days searching for his slain brother.
I'm feeling very pain because even right now, I've not even confirmed whether he's dead or alive. I've called him several times and his phone is off, so I don't even understand. I want to confirm whether he's alive or dead.
As I left Okech with the tears flowing down his face, I spoke to a perplexed Anne Njeri Njoroge, who stood in the long line to wait for her turn to identify her sister.
I'm still confused. I want to see if she's there.
Also at the mortuary was one of Kenya's renowned psychologists, Professor Catherine Gachuthia. With relatives and parents of the dead arriving, minute after minute, Professor Gachuthia put me through the paces of what she was doing.
What we are doing is to listen to them and to help them to be able to calm down. We pick their feelings, we pick their thoughts, we provide them with information, and then we tell them what is normal in a situation like this one and what is abnormal in a situation like this one. You're dealing with people who are pained so that they can be able to handle whatever challenges that they go through.
The killing of the students in Garissa has compelled President Uhuru Kenyatta to declare 3 days of national mourning as he addressed the nation on Saturday.
As we mourn together for the fallen, I declare 3 days of national mourning, during which our flag shall fly at half-mast. I also want to assure the families that the government will do everything possible to support the victims and their families.
As those affected spent their Easter weekend in the morning, Kenya's Vice President William Ruto announced that the government would meet the hospital and funeral costs of the victims.
James Shimanyula reporting from Nairobi. Now, a Kenyan newspaper, The Daily Nation, reported that it took the police 7 hours before sending a tactical unit into the student campus to stop the bloodbath. When they did enter, the confrontation lasted at least 30 minutes before all 4 gunmen were killed, according to the newspaper. So why the delay? Sela Onekwo put that question to Kenyan political analyst Martin Olu.
You know, I think that we seem to experience a situation where, as a country, our own level of preparedness for emergency, preparedness for this kind of attack is wanting. When you are in the right region, especially the northern region of Kenya, and you have a huge population of non-Muslims, that is an obvious target. We saw that in the Mandera massacre. We've seen that in the attack to churches and so on. So but the government must take serious steps to secure, to ensure that institutions that have mixed populations are protected and are additionally secured.
And the government has now named Mohamed Mohamud, who goes by the name of Duyadin Gamadere, as the mastermind of the attack, and they've put a bounty on his head of about $215,000, which is 20 million shillings. Now, he's part of Al-Shabaab, but he originally comes from Kenya. Is this becoming more of a homegrown problem?
It is. It is a homegrown problem. One of the persons, or one of the terrorists who was killed, is a fairly learned person, somebody who was a university student studying law. The father is a very senior person in the government, he's the chief in the local area. Yes, the father had reported that he had gone away or he had disappeared.
And how do you think a terror group like Al-Shabaab reaches people like that? Because, as you said, this was not somebody from the street, this was somebody who was a graduate, a law graduate.
The instance is that there is an element of media, social media, internet. And then, of course, with the mobile phone, there is a mechanism that is being used. So what you need is high-level surveillance, high-level cyber kind of detection in order for you to know what is being disseminated, what are people looking at. So, yes, they're using the medium, and they're also using places of worship. I mean, we saw not so long ago a slow infiltration of the mosque in the coastal region of Mombasa, and then they use the places of worship to propagate their beliefs and therefore to radicalize the youth.
Do you think that Kenyan security forces or the Kenyan government is able to deal with such a threat in terms of cybersecurity, but also stepping up security on the ground?
So this is possible. I mean, I've no doubt that the government has the capability of doing so. What it needs is to identify the right skills and invest in those skills in order for us to be able to combat with these menace.
Kenyan political analyst Martin Olu speaking to Africa Link's Sela Oneko.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
And now to Nigeria, as the All Progressive Congress of President-elect Muhammadu Buhari celebrate its victory, tension in volatile regions that were badly hit by post-election violence in 2011 has begun to subside. After the 2011 election, almost 800 people were killed, according to Human Rights Watch. It's been quiet this time round. Our correspondents, Adrian Krish and Jan Philip Scholz, were in Kaduna, one of the cities hardest hit 4 years ago. Their report has now been adapted for Africa Link by Crispin Mwakidewu.
Only ruins remain at the place where the house of Sanusi Issa once stood. It was destroyed 4 years ago following Nigeria's presidential elections. The government and opposition accused each other of election fraud, triggering violence between their supporters. Suddenly, churches and mosques were burning. What was once a political conflict turned into a bloody battle between Muslims and Christians. An enraged mob also targeted the home of Sanusi Issa, razing it to the ground. It's been long since he visited the scene, but shortly after the peaceful presidential election of March the 28th, Sanusi got the courage and confidence to return to the place he once called home.
Before the election, we are all scared. Everybody is scared, thinking that there will be a high rate of a crisis. But thanks to God, there's not anything like that. And in fact, that's why I'm beginning to think of repairing my house, because I have to come back here.
But Sanusi doesn't have the money needed to reconstruct his house. To date, he has not received any compensation that had been promised by the government. But he is not the only one. Thousands of residents were forced to flee their homes in Kaduna due to Boko Haram attacks. They have been stuck for months without a job, having been turned into refugees. After the electoral victory of opposition leader Muhammadu Buhari, the president-elect announced in his victory speech that all he needs is 6 months to defeat the insurgents. Nigerian political analyst Jibo Ibrahim thinks that goal might be difficult to achieve.
Eliminating Boko Haram completely will take a much longer period, because, as we have seen, just one suicide bomber could kill 50, 100 people. And you do have a number of people who have been radicalized and who are ready to give up their life in this battle.
Despite all that, many in Kaduna believe it's a new beginning for their country. For Sanusi Issa, the peaceful election and transition is the best sign that Muslims and Christians are finally putting their differences aside and are talking of a common future. Later this year, he plans to return to his old land with his family.
That report was compiled by Jan Philip Scholz and Adrian Krish in Kaduna. Now, Ghana and Ivory Coast are disputing over a maritime border closed at oil fields along the Gulf of Guinea. Through a project dubbed Tweneboa, Eyenra and Ntome, or TEN for short, Ghana began oil and gas exploration in 2009. But in 2013, Ivory Coast accused Ghana of encroaching on part of its territory rich in hydrocarbons. The two countries held 10 bilateral meetings but failed to come to a compromise. Now Ghana has filed a suit under the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, which is due to make a resolution in April. Our correspondent in Ghana, Isaac Kelechi, has more.
The oil field lies in the Gulf of Guinea, on the border between Ghana and Ivory Coast. There haven't been many disagreements until recently, when Ghana sanctioned oil exploration in large quantities. Ivory Coast wants the exploration stopped, but for Ghana, halting oil exploration will be catastrophic. 50% of work is already completed. If it were stopped, Ghana could lose over $2.2 billion by 2017, and the British company involved in the exploration, Talo Oil, could lose over $4 billion US. Here is Ghana's Attorney General speaking at the tribunal.
It is, we suggest, clear that Côte d'Ivoire's attempt to prevent the continuation of the existing activities is likely to seriously aggravate this dispute and make its resolution much harder. The measures sought by Côte d'Ivoire would guarantee disproportionate irreparable harm to Ghana.
But an oil expert in Ghana, Solomon Kwakumi, says he had warned the Ghana National Petroleum Corporation, GNPC, years about this dispute, but he was ignored.
When I started this work in 2009, and I got a map, activity map from GNPC, I came home and studied it. And with my knowledge in advanced level geography, I went back to them and told them that we were going to have problem with Ivory Coast, especially on these oil fields.
Many Ghanaians in the oil and gas sector are anxious about the tribunal's ruling and hope that their leaders put forward the better arguments. If Ivory Coast wins the case, over 1,000 Ghanaians working on the oil fields could lose their jobs. But the politics of oil are complex, and Yao Graham from the civil society group Third World Network warns that even if Ghana wins the case, more needs to be done so that the oil revenues actually reach ordinary Ghanaians. He says the Ghanaians only have one shot at getting a good deal.
The terms that we get for them, once they are finished, they are finished. If we don't get good terms for them, they are wasted, and there's no second chance. In addition, there's a hint that deals are cut, which make the situation worse. There's a problem.
For Kwakumi, more oil and gas experts are needed to help Ghana handle its natural resources and to avoid such disputes. As both countries have made their arguments, the tribunal will now decide the fate of the oil fields.
Isaac Kelechi in Accra. And it's now time to sit back and listen to Learning by Ear, Crossroads Generation.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Welcome back to our radio series, Crossroads Generation.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for a way. Crossroads Generation.
We are moving towards the end of this third season of our ongoing radio drama about the daily lives of Mercy, Dan and Nikki, three African teenagers. Dan has a child with Mercy, but right after the baby was born 3 years ago, he took off and came back only recently. Mercy didn't want to see him though. Dan has just started his own business, producing and selling handbags for ladies with a unique twist.
Are you serious? You mean these cute little handbags are made from plastic bags? From waste?
Yes, but of course, they are all clean now.
Well, Dan, I am Mrs. Jumbe. I would very much like to discuss business with you. Here's my card.
Dan's new business partner just happens to be the mother of Mercy's boyfriend, Nikki. And she's not a big fan of Mercy's. But Nikki has asked Mercy to marry him anyway. Before they took the big step, the couple went for premarital counseling and were utterly shocked when the counselor gave them the results of a blood test.
Okay. Mercy, it says here that your status is negative. That means that you don't have HIV. But Nikki, you've tested positive for HIV.
What?
This is the 25th episode entitled Recalling the Past. We pick up the story with Mercy and Nikki, who are standing outside the counseling center.
Nikki, how could this have happened?
Mercy, I don't know what to tell you.
Just tell me the truth, Nikki. Have you been sleeping with other women behind my back?
Mercy, I'm so, so sorry.
Don't keep telling me you're sorry. Tell me what I want to know. Did you or did you not sleep around?
Mercy, please. This is hard for me too.
Answer me, Nikki. Just answer
me. Of course not. I've always been honest with you. I never slept with anyone. You know that. I was waiting for you. You are the one who slept with Dan back then.
I can't believe you'd bring that up again. You and I weren't even together at the time. And you told me when we got together that you could handle it.
Well, right now, I have other things I have to handle.
So how did you get infected if you weren't sleeping around?
I don't know how it happened. I don't know, okay?
Nikki, I don't know what to think or who to believe anymore. I trusted you. And I've already told my parents that you're getting married tomorrow.
Where are you going? We need to go back in and talk to the counselor.
I can't even look at you right now.
Mercy, come back. Please come back.
Mama Nikki, you haven't said a word all the way to and from the doctor. What's wrong?
Nothing.
Come on, my wife. I know you.
I said there's nothing wrong, okay?
All right. Hey, no need to snap at me. Where's my medicine?
I don't know. You were carrying it.
I can't see it.
Don't ask me. We don't share it, do we?
Look, how long are you going to suck for Janet? It's not my fault that you and Nikki are fighting all the time. Just stop this nonsense and make peace with your son.
Nikki wouldn't listen to me, so he's no longer my son as far as I'm concerned.
You're pushing him away. You're making him rebellious.
I don't care anymore.
Aha. So you don't care what he does?
No, I don't. What I'm concerned about is that my husband does not support me.
I do. You just can't see it. I don't want Nikki to hate us if he marries a girl we pick for him. A girl he doesn't want. He would blame us every time something went wrong.
So be it. Let him do what he wants. I don't care what he does anymore.
So I guess if I told you that your son is getting married tomorrow, it wouldn't bother you, right?
What did you say?
You heard me. Apparently, Nikki and Mercy have an appointment to get married, and we're not invited.
Nikki wouldn't dare. He was just bluffing when he told us he wanted to marry that girl.
I don't think so, Janet.
How do you know about the appointment anyway?
Mercy's father, Msoto, just sent me a message asking for dowry. Can you believe it?
What? I have to go.
Hey, where are you going?
I'll be back shortly.
This family.
Come in.
Hello again.
Hi, Mercy. Come in. How are you and Nikki doing?
I don't know. I don't know what to do. I just needed to talk to someone.
You did well to come to me. That's what our counseling center is for.
How could this happen to us? Just when you thought everything was going to turn out fine.
I know, Mercy. It's not very good news to receive, especially when you're so close to getting married.
I trusted him. How could he do this to me? How could he sleep around and yet he asks me to marry him and tells me he wants to be a father to my child?
Mercy, calm down. Have you talked to Nikki about all this?
Nikki says he hasn't slept with anyone. But then, how come he has the virus? How am I supposed to trust him?
Mercy, as I've already told Nikki, HIV is not necessarily transmitted sexually. That's the way most people know about. But lots of people contract it through an infected blood transfer, for example, or when they take drugs and share a needle. It can also be passed on at birth. Or
Nicky had this period years ago when he had drug problems. But I thought it was just alcohol and marijuana.
Mercy, I can't tell you how Nicky got infected. He may not even know himself. But is that really what matters now? You were ready to get married. You told me you trusted each other. Nicky needs your support now more than ever before.
I don't know what to think. How can I be with someone who's HIV positive? We won't be able to start a family.
I thought you were already a family. Nicky, your daughter, and you. Besides, there are many other options we can discuss later with both of you. With the right treatment, it is possible for a couple to have a healthy child, even if one of the partners is HIV positive. The most important thing right now is that Nicky has to start antiretroviral therapy as soon as possible. That will make a big difference to his life expectancy.
I don't know. I just don't know. I have to go.
Remember, my door's always open if you want to talk.
Thank you.
Mercy?
Yes?
Everyone makes mistakes. Haven't you ever made one?
Save the environment. Buy recycled bags. Bags for the lady.
Hi, Dan.
Oh, Mama Nikki. Hello.
How's business?
Fine. I was just planning to bring you some more bags.
Actually, that's not why I'm here.
What do you mean?
I bet you don't know that Nikki and that girl, Mercy, are engaged and about to get married.
What?
Yes. Tomorrow. She's the mother of your child, Dan, isn't she?
She is. Oh, I can't believe this. I wanted to ask her if we could get back together once I'd built up my business and saved up a bit.
Hard, isn't it? Luckily, you and I both want the same thing. We have to stop the wedding.
What?
Listen, this is what I want you to do.
So, what are Dan and Mrs. Jumbe planning to do about the wedding? Will there be a wedding at all after what's just happened? Don't miss the final episode of this third season of Crossroads Generation, Facing the Future. Until then, you can check out our webpage at dw.de/LBE or discuss what you just heard on our Facebook page. Take care.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation. Our future starts today.
Everyone around us seems to have good advice, but do we want someone else to decide about our life?
So who do we trust? Who's a real friend? Who will support us and not only pretend?
I'm standing at the crossroads trying to be strong. Where should I turn to? Where do I belong?
There's so many temptations that you cannot just ignore. Maybe interesting for now, but how about tomorrow?
We get high and then fall deeper than we've ever been before. We can drown our sorrows, but in the end there will be more. It's up, but we can do it.
Our life is in our hands.
It's up, but we can do it.
Our life is in our hands. Whatever road we take and whatever choice we make,
let's be inspired by the future that we want to be great.
It's up, but we can do it.
Our life is in our hands.
It's up, but we can do it.
Our life is in our hands.
And now a reminder of the main stories that we've been reporting on for the last 25 minutes. Kenya is holding a three-day national mourning period after an attack on a student campus that left at least 148 students dead. Tension has subsided in Nigeria's volatile regions where many residents had fled afraid of post-election violence. We welcome your comments on this program either via text message to country code 49160-957-59510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. And I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.